Hello, Roy here. I just wanted to let you know that you can listen to The Roy Green Show ad-free on Amazon Music, included with Prime.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
How many times have we spoken to presidents of the Canadian Medical Association about the issues revolving around proper health care that we all pay for? It's not free. You pay for it with your taxes. 6 million Canadians have no family doctor. But I also wonder how many Canadians are waiting for surgeries? How many Canadians are waiting for proper care? Even if they have a family doctor, proper care as far as hospitalization is concerned or tests or what you may require. Because we know there's a backlog, a significant backlog when it comes to surgeries. And so repeatedly I've spoken with presidents of the Canadian Medical Association about the state of our healthcare, and repeatedly Canadian Medical Association presidents have told us what is required. And I'm about to again to speak with Dr. Kathleen Ross, who's the president of the Canadian Medical Association now. And the CMA has a message for the government as Tuesday's budget is about to roll out. But I asked Mr. Poilievre in our interview with him in the last half hour what he foresees, what he would do, how he identifies the issues and challenges as far as Canadian healthcare is concerned. Here's a little of what he said.
Well, the simplest and the lowest hanging fruit we have is the many doctors and nurses that we have in Canada who were effectively banned from practicing medicine. You've got 20,000 immigrant doctors and 32,000 immigrant nurses banned from practicing because there's no direct path to prove their qualifications.
And that is a critical issue, and that is an issue that has been brought up time and again as well. I remember 20-odd years ago speaking with the then president of the CMA about a doctor I'd interviewed who had led a hospital in Southeast Asia and was delivering newspapers in Kingston, Ontario. That doctor stopped delivering newspapers and in relatively short order was able to get a job as an investigative physician in Alberta. But he was forced to deliver newspapers because he couldn't practice his specialty. There was no path for him to take the test that was required because only a limited number of doctors were approved. New doctors were approved in Canada. Probably the same situation. Back with us is the president of the Canadian Medical Association, Dr. Kathleen Ross. Dr. Ross, thank you very much. Let me ask you this before we do anything else. You and I have talked for almost a year now. Have we made any progress, meaningful progress, identifiable progress, as far as the health care issues and challenges are concerned in that time period?
So I would say yes, that there are definitely pockets of progress across the country. And I do highlight this fairly significant investment promises in last year's budget that carried through to bilateral agreements. And a big part of those bilateral agreements is looking at the key goals that we need to address. And you highlighted that already. You know, family physicians and primary care providers, and the number of people that don't have access to those, and the lengthy wait times, as you've highlighted. And I would add into that mix the emergency departments across the country that are, you know, operating well above capacity or not able to seek staff to stay open. But as we look to the implementation of those bilateral agreements, that extra dollars that were provided, I'm hoping that we'll see those transparent and accountable measures that we can share with Canadians. And I just because I'm from British Columbia, I'll give you a BC example. a shift in how we remunerated family physicians, recognizing the tremendous amount of unpaid tasks that they were doing was a remarkable landmark a year ago. And we've seen an increase in the number of family physicians taking on panels of patients here in British Columbia. It's a step in the right direction, but we can't let our foot off the gas yet.
Do we have the numbers of physicians in this country? And I'll include in that question the newcomers to Canada who practice medicine in the country of their origin, who are quite willing to take the tests required in order to be certified in Canada. Do we have the raw numbers to provide the necessary doctors across Canada or part of Canada? Is the raw material there?
So from a physician point of view, I would say no. But we actually also lack the tremendous number of other healthcare providers, not enough nurses, not enough personal support workers. We really do need to increase the number of healthcare workers that we're training. And we do have underutilized international healthcare workers, but we honestly can't recruit our way out of this either. So working to streamline how we recognize the credentials and really support the transition of international graduates into our healthcare system is part of the answer. But we do need to start training more people, and we need to actually train more healthcare workers to work in what we call interprofessional primary care. So it won't just be a family doctor that you see. You may have a nurse or nurse practitioner, a physiotherapist, a social worker, other members of the team that may meet the needs that you need for your primary care.
In the statement of the CMA issued prior to the budget, there's this. There are challenges in every province and territory in Canada. Years of neglect have led us to where we are today, and solutions cannot be implemented overnight. Our challenges will not be resolved in silos. Collaboration is needed. So I understand from what you said to us a moment ago that all the provinces and territories have signed bilateral health agreements with the federal government. That's in your statement as well. Is there the will to create the dynamic that you've told us previously is needed? Mobility for physicians, mobility for patients, just looking at what we have and creating a reality where person A, who may be in British Columbia, can go to Alberta for a treatment, or person B in Alberta could go to Quebec if necessary for treatment. Is there the will, provincially and federally, to create that kind of situation, that kind of dynamic?
So I think there's a lot more pressure on governing bodies now because of how awake and alive the public is to this issue. And you're right, we keep coming back to same conversations, and we'll keep having those same conversations until we actually solve our access problem. And that may seem a little bit like Groundhog Day, but at the
end of the day,
we're making incremental progress towards our goals, but we just have to keep highlighting these things, you know. Transparent and accountable measures of where our money is going and what are we getting for it. And that collaborative, constructive, and really outcome-focused effort on behalf of all governments is going to be needed to create that meaningful change in how we plan for healthcare and how we deliver it coast to coast to coast. That, you know, at the moment, we don't even have the simplest of data of who is doing what where in jurisdictions across Canada. And I think we've seen commitment and building towards, a healthcare workforce, Canada, that allows us to start to study who's doing what where and understanding the intersection and overlap of scope of various providers in our healthcare system. But there's a lot more to do to understand our workforce. And that has that's not been something we've been paying attention to for a very long time.
No, it hasn't. Do you believe, Dr. Rawson, I'm looking again at the statement that CMA released, and underscored is meaningful solutions. And one of the solutions that's been suggested, and it's a very controversial one for some reason, and that is an increased role for private healthcare or semi-private healthcare in Canada. Do you believe there is a need for an increased presence? Does the CMA believe in the need for an increased private or semi-private healthcare presence in Canada?
And so I think we'll be having another conversation about this in June, because we're just wrapping up our coast-to-coast consultations with Canadians around that balance of public-private. And we undertook this work in conjunction with the Globe and Mail to go out and have an opportunity to educate Canadians about the percentage of our healthcare system that's already underneath the private system. 30% or almost 30% of our services are actually already funded privately. So there's a lot of tensions that come around that, you know, equity of access, ease of access, timeliness of access, all of those concerns that Canadians have when they're seeking healthcare. Looking at that balance of what Canadians are asking for and what the evidence has to say about increasing the role of private care is why we undertook this work. And that evidence review, that consultation, as we wrap up our report, we'll be sharing that publicly in June. And it'll be very interesting to share with Canadians, you know, what are our perspectives and how do we move forward?
Mm-hmm. It's critical. I'd like to ask you about two of the points that are in your statement, which you addressed in the first answer, but I'd like to just touch on these a little more directly. My questions have to do with the lengthy wait times for surgeries and diagnostics and life-saving treatments, and emergency departments across the country routinely operating well beyond capacity and hospitals well above full occupancy levels, taken from your statement, your pre-budget statement, by the Canadian Medical Association to the government. Your thoughts, please.
So there's no question that these solutions are going to be complicated. We look at surgeries and lengthy wait for surgeries. Are we utilizing our operating rooms across the country in the publicly supported system in the most optimal way? And there are many examples where we're not, and that has to do with lack of staffing for surgical nurses, for anesthesiologists. This is a challenge. Diagnostic facilities are a mixture of in-hospital and out-of-hospital. And again, looking at building capacity requires time and investment for sure, but training more medical technologists, ultrasonographers, these are skill sets that we need to enhance. And it's so heartbreaking as a family physician to walk the journey with a patient that needs cancer care in particular, that is waiting longer than we would like to see, waiting longer for investigations to determine what type of surgery patients may need or treatment they need for cancer treatment. There's a lot to unpack here. And when it comes to emergency departments, again, it's complicated. There are some things that a good, robust, community-based primary care system would remove from the emergency department, but people still need to come in to get treated for acute illnesses or seniors with complex illnesses, and yet we have difficulty transitioning back either into long-term care or rehabilitation beds or supported care at home. Hospital at home is definitely taking off, but in small pockets across the country, there's a lot that we can do to up the capacity in the community to transition people out and free up space in our emerge.
Just thinking about what you said, about how heartbreaking it is for a family physician like yourself, and you're dealing with a cancer patient who requires the attention and medication in order to hopefully hold the cancer at bay for some period, and possibly even create a cure environment, when the infrastructure doesn't lend itself to that. And the question that springs to mind for me is, if all of the things that you would like to see done, the requests that you make of the government, and you made repeatedly, if all of that came to pass, how long would it take to create an environment where the diagnostics, the surgeries, all of the needs that we have, the emergency departments operating as they should, how long do you think it would take to create the dynamic where our healthcare system actually works as it's designed to do, or supposed to do?
It's a great question. And unfortunately, I'm not sure that we have the accurate data to answer that. We, again, don't know 100% who's doing what, where, when. So as we look at these investments and start tracking in a transparent way and a standardized way across the country, collecting that data on what type of systems actually provide the most effective and efficient care to patients, then we'll be able to answer that in targeted investments. We expect this much money to make this big of a difference. And at the moment, we do not have comprehensive data that answers that. So our call not to let the foot off the gas, to make sure that we are continuing to invest in healthcare. It's not a one and done as yet. And I absolutely acknowledge that not all health and wellness is what we deliver in the healthcare system. It's housing, it's education, it's food security. It's all of these things that we understand in the greater social determinants of health. But we need to actually know what we're trying to fix. Continue the investment, continue building our workforce, and when we find the gaps, then we can target those next.
Yeah, so true. Need to know what we're trying to fix. Identify the issue, identify the problem, and then get at it. Dr. Ross, always good to talk. Sorry?
Yeah, so I was just going to say, having that North Star, like setting the North Star, is so critically important.
If you want to hear more, subscribe to The Roy Green Show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you find your favorites. And if you like what you hear, leave us a review and tell a friend. I'm Roy Green. Have a great weekend.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.